There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
So what happens when you're raised in a shifting environment in which travel, when home as we know it, is just a temporary stop on perhaps a rootless journey around the world? We are talking about third culture kids this afternoon, of which there are many here in Dubai, both as adults and many of us are raising our own third culture kids. Joined in the studio by Sabine from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. She's a clinical psychologist and here to offer some emotional support to anyone who needs it, as well as offering her expert insights. Good afternoon, Sabine.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Very well. We're going to be talking about third culture kids, a topic that is very, very close to many people's hearts here in the region as we adjust and navigate raising children perhaps in a way that we weren't raised ourselves. But before that, I want to get your opinion on a few stories that have caught my eye over the last couple of days. Now, the World Cup is upon us. So whether you're a supporter or not, most people will be tuning in. Will you be tuning in?
Yes.
Yeah. Who will be supporting?
Can I say it?
Of course you can say it.
Germany.
Can I ask why?
Because from where I come from, either Lebanon, mm-hmm. you either mostly support Brazil or Germany.
That's really interesting.
It's very interesting.
Why?
Because I don't think Lebanon has ever been qualified to attend the World Cup. So I don't know. I mean, this is what I got from my parents and my families. Yes, absolutely.
That's so
I have no idea. If you ask me who the team players are, I would not be able to tell you.
I love that the country has chosen two of the most successful football teams in history. It's not like, well, we might just go for Iceland or Ireland.
No, we're going
Brazil or Germany.
Exactly.
Backing a potentially successful team. But what's really interesting around this time, and studies have shown in the States, how your favourite team does in terms of winning and losing can impact your waistline, believe it or not. So this was came across a really fascinating study that was done by French researchers who looked at the eating habits of NFL fans. And not only did they find the connection between losing teams and eating more, but fans of winning teams ate healthier and less food overall.
Why do you think that is?
Well, a bit of emotional eating to console.
Yes,
but I always wondered if you were to win, would there be an element of kind of celebratory eating as well? So Professor Pierre Chandon told USA Today, one day after a defeat, Americans eat 16% more saturated fat and 10% more calories. But on the day after a victory of their favourite team, then it's the opposite. They eat more healthily. They eat 9% less saturated fat and 5% fewer calories. So just a word of warning for anyone who's getting emotionally invested in the upcoming World Cup. Just have some healthy snacks nearby.
Sure, I'm sure it will help.
I'd love to get your take on that if you become a bit of an emotional eater when it comes to winning and losing. How do you feel about a strong handshake, Sabine? Is it something you judge people on?
I prefer, personally, a strong handshake because it conveys, confidence and also a warm handshake with good eye contact rather than, you know, like a loose kind of a
floppy
shake. Yeah, because it makes you feel like you have germs and they don't want you to contaminate them.
This is, again, my personal That's so interesting because if I get a kind of a floppy, like a kind of mimsy handshake, yeah, as you say, it doesn't convey confidence or controlling a situation or authority.
Welcome, yes, like
exactly.
A warm welcome.
Well, interestingly, how a man's grip, how strong it is or how weak it is, can actually predict their marital status.
Really?
So as women, we are predisposed to gravitate towards men who've got a stronger handshake. I'm sure for very obvious reasons in terms of, you know, virility and dominance and all that kind of base anthropological stuff. But actually, it does make a good, you know, first good impression. And it's also associated with good health. So studies are now showing that on a kind of a subconscious level, we're really gravitating towards those good handshakes because it indicates good cardiovascular health. And at a time when women are outliving men, the subconscious suggestion seems to be that if we marry a man who's got good health, then, you know, we're going to be together for a bit longer. So men out there, if you are looking to court, to woo a lady, just give a proper handshake. Just don't be shy. We're not intimidated by it.
No.
Let's get in there.
We want someone in control.
You said it, not me. So have your say on the show this afternoon. We would love to hear your take on third culture kids. We'll be getting into the topic really in depth later on. That's going to be looking at the psychological effects, looking at the benefits and challenges facing third culture kids, and that could be as children or as us as adults as well, and also talking about how we can support our children in terms of finding their identity, and when it comes to repatriation as well, how we can help children adjust. Speaking of children, father's age at conception affects social development in children, studies find. This is from a couple of months ago, but has just hit the news recently in Washington. Paternal age at conception, particularly if a father was very young or much older, affects social development. Why do you think that might be, Sabine?
Because I think, you know, it's common knowledge that fathers start to interact with babies when they are, when the babies become more interactive. So after the 6 months, you know, when they're
getting smiles and the recognition.
Exactly, absolutely. In the first few months, they're less interested because fathers are more physical and they're very, they become more involved when there is reciprocation, reciprocity from the child. So the younger the father is, the more they have, if you want, the emotional disposition or patience to be more playful with the baby, you know, between starting 6 months and onwards.
So they're talking about children born to fathers below the age of 25 and over the age of 51 exhibited pro-social behaviours in the early stages of development. But by adolescence, their social behaviours weren't advanced as their peers. So this is done on 15,000 twins, a sample age 4 to 16 in the United Kingdom. So there's not much we can do about it, quite frankly. You have kids when you have kids.
Absolutely.
But it's quite interesting to see how that can play out and how we can be mindful of that
especially with mothers that get frustrated that fathers are more or less involved. You know, what we hear mostly is that the mothers want the fathers to be a bit more involved. Fathers are very important for social development, actually, because they break, they get in that bond, the couple, the of mom and baby, and this is very important for the child to experience a third party as well and not just be you know, involved in that dyad, you know.
I think it's very common of men feeling like they don't really know how to fit in, especially during those first 6 months, and if the mum is breastfeeding, to feel like they don't know how to contribute. So I think as mums, we can all be a bit more mindful and inclusive,
absolutely,
where possible. It's easier said than done.
Yeah.
And I would say, as a mum, don't criticise.
It's very hard. Don't do it like this. He doesn't like to be bottle fed this way. Okay, and then the fathers usually give up because they don't want to feel criticised.
Understandably as well. Now, we've talked about loneliness on the show before, Sabine, but a psychology study came out just a couple of days ago. This is from Business Insider. It's talking about how loneliness is actually an epidemic, and it's actually a greater public health hazard than perhaps obesity. And there was some really good advice in this article that we're going to be sharing in terms of how to combat loneliness. What do you think it can have? What kind of effect it can have on mental health?
Loneliness, it makes you feel very isolated. It's a negative perception of being on your own, being rejected, abandoned, not being good enough to be with someone or surrounded by not lovable enough, basically.
So it's a self-esteem issue.
Absolutely. And it's quite ironic because in the age where we are mostly virtually connected, we feel the most isolated.
Disconnected.
As well. Yeah.
So John Cacioppo, who actually died earlier this year, he founded the University of Chicago Center for Cognitive and Social Neuroscience, and he studied how the brains of lonely people changed in ways that could basically exacerbate negative feelings associated with loneliness. And he's written some tips about how to change your mindset. So if you are feeling lonely, the steps that you can take to reach out and connect to people. And of course, it's easier said than done. And, you know, if there's loneliness linked to depression and social anxiety, then there are bigger issues at play there. But his top tips were extend yourself. So he's saying, you know, small doses of positive sensations that come from positive social interactions. So just simple activities like attending social events, making small talk, volunteering. So increasing the contact you have with people. again, it can be easier said than done if you are crippled by loneliness and often shyness, trying to leave the house, you know.
Yes, there's also you know, a survival component to it, because our ancestors used to be in groups. Mm-hmm. The only way to survive, you know, nature and bigger animals is to be in a pack. And the fact that, you know, you feel lonely or isolated also impacts that, because it's like you're not good enough to be with the pack and you don't have that protection. Mm-hmm. So people were usually punished by being left alone in the wilderness for other elements to take care of.
But it is something that people are in control of, and the second point does signal that thing. You do have the capacity to take action that will change. You're not adrift on basically through a genetic problem. You can take concrete steps to help eliminate those feelings of social isolation. So that in itself is empowering, that you can take some action there. It's also saying be selective with your social activities. So try and find shared interests and hobbies, you know, the likes of the book club, running club, things that you enjoy, where you're going to meet like-minded people. And also, and I think this is the most important point, expect the best. If you enter a social activity expecting to be ignored or thinking that people won't be friendly, it's easy to turn that into a self-fulfilling prophecy and to project that. But if you go in expecting warmth and friendliness, you know, and connection, it's easy to project that warmth and, you know, hopefully have it reciprocated as well. Now, when we come back, we're getting into our topic of third culture kids. Are you a third culture kid? Are you raising one? Would you need some advice, or do you just want to share your story? We would love to hear it. I'm Helen Farmer. This is Dubai Today. We're joined by Sabine. She is a clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, here to offer her expert insights as ever. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, Sabine.
You're welcome.
Now, we are talking about third culture kids. It's more than a definition or a category or even a precedent. Barack Obama is one of the world's most famous.
Yes.
Third culture kids. In fact, it's actually becoming a trend. In a 2016 global population study by the UN found that the number of international migrants, that's people living in a country other from where they were born, has hit 244 million. It's up 41% since the year 2000. The study found that a number of international migrants has actually grown faster than the global population, and humanity is moving more than ever, faster than ever, around the planet. There's a really famous book about third culture kids, Sabine, that we've both been discussing this morning. Mm-hmm. This is it's basically called the kind of Third Culture Kids Growing Up Among Worlds, and it's by Ruth Van Recken. And in her words, she's saying it's almost becoming the new normal. She grew up herself as a TKC, as it's commonly known, growing up between Nigeria and the US, and she's studying and been working with TKC since 1984. How do you define a third culture kid, Sabine?
My definition is anyone who has been born and raised in a culture that is not their parents. And it's very similar, actually, to her definition as well. So any child who is an expat child, who moves around with mom and dad for different reasons.
So it's, you could say all expat children
likely be immigrants as well, and so on. Because people move for different reasons as well. Some of us choose to move, and some of us are forced into leaving our home countries.
And for many people here in the UAE, it's a business, it's a financial decision, and also opens up a cultural world that was perhaps, you know,
very privileged.
So would you consider your children then to be third culture kids?
Absolutely, of course.
How old are yours? And you were too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us more.
Born and raised in Saudi in the 70s, and then moved to different countries for educational purposes, and I found myself in Dubai 15 years ago.
And you're Lebanese in terms of your parents' heritage?
Yes, both, yeah.
Interesting. And then your husband is
Lebanese with Canadian citizenship.
And all of your children were born here?
Yes, two of them. Okay. But they consider themselves to be Emirati, so it was quite a shock for them to understand that they are not Emirati.
It's different to be born here and raised here.
Yes,
and
but they have really strongly identified with the culture. They're very proud of it. They know the national anthem and they celebrate it. They don't even know the national anthem of their home country, you know. And it's my fault, but they have really strongly identified. They're very proud to belong. They feel that this is where they belong.
So if you were to ask them, where are you from, what would they say?
They would say Dubai.
And they are. If they're born and raised here.
Yes.
And that's the thing. It's not a clear cut answer at all.
And it was very heartbreaking for me to see how sad they were to understand that they were not, you know, their home country is not here. But where is home? Where is our home if it's not here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a lot of these questions do come up, and these are the challenges of third culture kids, the TCKs.
And what are the psychological impacts of a third culture kid being raised in that way?
Well, there are benefits and there are disadvantages, of course. The benefits is that you become very resilient, very, you know, you adapt, you understand conflict, you understand miscommunication, you can step in, you become very resourceful, you know, in terms of your communication skills as well as your adaptability. But as well, at some point you may feel rootless, homeless. You may feel you have some commitment difficulties because you are used to moving so much. You don't want to create that bond mm-hmm. with other people, because the first time you left the first place that you were in, it was too painful. So as a, you know, a way to protect yourself, you become very pragmatic and practical about, you know, relationships, and you manage your expectations differently when you're a third culture kid.
That's interesting. Yes. Are you raising a third culture kid, or are you a third culture kid yourself? What do you feel are the benefits and the challenges? Tell your story and join the conversation. Now have a listen to these TKCs talking about how they feel about home and where they belong.
My name is Joseph Chandra.
My name is Rachel Rothkar.
My name is Sarah Hemmerly.
Sarah Bella.
I'm Rachel.
And my name is Katie.
I have lived in about 9 houses, and I'm going on my 10th.
I think it's 8.
I've lived in 8 houses, I believe. Where am I from? I don't really know how to answer that. I've lived quite a few places.
Really depends on where I am at the time and who's asking.
I am from the USA. Asia, and airports.
A little bit of everywhere.
I don't know.
Wherever you're surrounded by the people that you love.
More than a place or a location, I think it's just the people that make you feel comfortable and make you feel like you can be yourself.
I think I feel the most sense of belonging in the United States, because every time I cross the border from Canada to the United States, I think I feel more of like, you know, oh, this is home, you know, I'm back home.
I'd say that home is wherever I spend the night, and whether it be the streets or a hotel or a house that we're staying in, anywhere. Where my family is, where I am, that's my home.
There you go, TKC kids themselves sharing their experience of home and where they feel like they belong. Do get in touch and share your interpretation of this term and your experience as well. Julie saying on the text line, although not completely expat children, the benefit to my 3 daughters in terms of personal growth has been insurmountable. However, as parents, we are now not sure where we will retire to. Where is our home?
Mm.
That's a really interesting one, isn't it?
Recurrent question. Of course. I mean, when you've lived most of your adult life as an adult or your developmental years as a child moving, it is very difficult to plant some roots,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's very difficult to stick to a place. And this moving, the third culture kids, is not just about moving countries. It's also moving within a larger country. You know, moving different states, for example, moving different towns. I'm working with someone who has moved a lot with the mother. The mother was a single mother, and she moved a lot for professional reasons. And the other day she was telling me, I envy people that tell me I'm going back home to my room, because I don't know where my room is, because we have never... Like, even the last house that she was in with her mom has been also rented out. So she doesn't have that sense of connection to the childhood.
And we'll be talking later about repatriation as well, and how we can support ourselves and our children when it comes to settling down or going back home, wherever that might be. So we'd love to hear your take on this topic. Sabine is here to answer any questions when it comes to mental health or psychological support. And if you prefer to not put your name on that message, we completely understand. That is absolutely fine. We'll be back after this. Lots of texts coming in. Understandably, we live very much in a diverse and multicultural environment here in Dubai. John saying, I grew up abroad and now live away from my family. I worry about how to settle in back into the UK when we do eventually move back, because it feels that we are now far more broad-minded, he says, ducking for cover. But I think that actually speaks to a really interesting point, that as expats, as third culture kids, as people who've moved abroad and are living internationally, we have our eyes and minds and ears opened to so much.
Because we are exposed to so much at such a young age. So definitely we have this proneness to be more open-minded than someone who has stayed in their country of origin and is constantly only exposed to that culture, that background.
And then it becomes an echo chamber of really just surrounding yourself with people who have very, very similar opinions and perhaps have never left.
Because it is your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. It becomes your comfort zone. And anyone who is going back to the home country, repatriation, becomes like the odd one out. It's very difficult for them to reintegrate, because their understanding of the world is different. Their values are different.
I've been in Dubai 11 years, so I came here in my, you know, early 20s. And even though I wasn't raised here, my parents were expats. They lived all over. But I was born and raised in the UK and then moved here. And even coming 10, 11 years ago, my eyes have been opened in ways that I could never would have predicted.
Yes.
I've learned so much, not just about the UAE and about Arabic and about Islam, and but also through the people that you meet in Dubai, because, and then we always use the word cultural melting pot.
Yes, but it is such an enriching experience for children, absolutely.
We're really, really lucky, it has to be said. So we'll be talking a little bit about the benefits. We'd love to have your side of the story. Whether you're a third culture kid yourself or you're here in Dubai raising them, share your experiences, good and bad. And if you do need some support from Sabine, we are here for you. You don't need to put your name on that message. And Omar, you're joining us. You're a third culture kid yourself and a parent.
Yes, that's correct.
How's your experience been? Where are you from, to ask that so-called simple question? Where were you born and where did you grow up, Omar?
Okay, so I was born in Karachi, Pakistan, and I was only 8 months old when I was brought to Saudi Arabia. And I grew up in Saudi Arabia for the most part of my childhood before going to a boarding school in the U.S. in Michigan. And I stayed there to get my degrees, etc. I mean, my high school, bachelor's, master's. And then I came back to Saudi Arabia for like a transition period of 2 years before finding myself in Dubai. So I'm a third culture kid, but at the same time now I have two kids of my own. The daughter is 5 years old now, and the son will be turning 3. And it's going to be the end of the first year in school for my daughter. Mm-hmm. And this is where the conundrum, you know, this is where I find myself a little bit in a place where it's like it's a no man's land, because I've always been able to identify myself as a third culture kid, and I was okay with it. I mean, Pakistan was never my home, as well as Saudi Arabia was either, but I was comfortable with it. You know, it wasn't a big deal. But now when I'm raising my kids, I mean, I know for a fact that I am only going to be here in Dubai temporarily, even though I've been living here for 5 years. And
that old chestnut.
So at the same time, I grew up in Saudi Arabia. So the food over here, the Middle Eastern food in general, it's like a playground for me. You know, I know everything about it. Mm-hmm. I know the ingredients. I can explain it to other people. Whereas Pakistani food is not suitable for me. Now, my wife, she's a born and bred Pakistani citizen, Pakistani girl. And for her, she has compartmentalized in her mind. In Urdu, in Pakistan, we have this word called pardes. Now, the word means anyone who is an expat, right? So my wife has this compartmentalization in her mind that, yes, living in pardes is a little bit different, and this is how you have to behave, and this is how you have to raise your kids, et cetera, et cetera. For me, there is no home. Mm-hmm. As you know, you started your conversation in your show, today that where do you consider yourself to be local in? There's a wonderful talk, in fact, on TED Talks that could be a good tidbit for your show by Thai Selassie. And that's what it's, the topic of the talk is, where do you consider yourself to be a local at? That's what you are. But now my main question for your guest is that I am raising two kids now. Now, my wife has very strong, she knows what to, you know, how to raise them, how should she raise them in terms of identifying their home. But I know from being on the other side of the river, I know that they will not be able to identify themselves as you have been or have, you know, you have identified yourself since your childhood. So tips and suggestions for me, really, at this stage. For my kids.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the good thing is that they're very young. They're still very young, so you can like pinpoint things to them the way that you want to. It's very common that when expats come to Dubai, they hold on even more stronger to their culture of origin. So they want their kids to speak the language, to be exposed to the food, to the shows. You know, they constantly are exposed to the extended family and so on. It's also a way of protection, you know, like I don't want to lose my identity as when I become an expat. And you have to find like a balance of how much you want them to know about their culture of origin and how much also you're willing to integrate the host culture. And I think it's an enriching experience. It does not have to be either or. It does not have to be all or nothing, because we have chosen to live here and we are exposed to many different things, no matter what our cultural background is. And this could be, you know, handled in a positive way. It doesn't have to be all about, you know, where the parents are from, because you're preparing them for their future. And if you, as parents, view this expat life as a positive one, then this is what will the take on for them will be. As opposed to if you feel you're not comfortable, you're not happy, you're not doing well, this is also how they will perceive it. So they will look at you and learn from you. You will model that expat life for them.
Has it caused any problems with you and your wife, Omar, in terms of your parenting approaches or what you want to be introducing to the children?
No, on the contrary, actually, it's a learning experience for both of us. I mean, the way I have learned about Pakistan and the Pakistani culture since I've been married, it's like tenfold as compared to what I picked up.
The rest of your life, yeah.
Yeah, really. And the way I have explored Pakistan since after I have been married, it's like hundredfold, you know, from what, even though my parents used to take me every year during summer vacation. Mm-hmm. And same thing is with my wife. I mean, the way she's learning, I mean, she's glad that she's with somebody who is like a second generation Middle Eastern kid, because she feels she has like an added advantage of going into situations such as schooling or anything else for the matter, where language is not a barrier for me because I can speak Arabic as well. Because in Saudi Arabia, you have to be fluent. It's not like UAE, especially when you were growing up in 90s.
Major benefit, really, in terms of being a third culture kid. That's awesome.
So my wife, I would say that, you know, she's getting a hang of, like, you know, raising her kids here. But at the same time, what's interesting is that since I have been married, I have felt the need to be connected to the home culture.
Yes, absolutely.
And having my kids connect to the home culture, even though when I was growing up myself, I never felt the need to.
Yes, yes, yes. It has to do with fear of identity loss. Like, I don't want to lose who I was. It's like going back to your home country when you've lived abroad for a very long time. But it's also a learning experience for you, which is good now.
And it's also uniting you as a family, you know, for you and your wife to come together with this commonality and raise your children together, which is really lovely and really positive. But as Sabine says, this is a really positive thing. And if you're passing down anxiety to them about being, you know, conflicted or not happy about it, they'll pick up on it. So I know your kids are only 3 and 5, but what does your 5-year-old say if you were to ask her where she's from, or on International Day at school, where would she want to kind of represent, do you think?
She says we're from Ajman, because I live in Ajman, so I came here from Ajman. That's her reply. So honestly,
also true.
She's starting to build up this identity, you know, and sometimes when you're showing her, like, the monuments or the famous landmarks of Pakistan, she has no clue. She doesn't have any association with them. And my wife is just, like, you know, staring at them sometimes in disgust and sometimes in awe that, oh, my God, how do you not know that? But, hey, she's your daughter.
Well, that means you can be learning and discovering
yes,
together, right?
Of course.
Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. All the best to you and the family. Message here saying, hi, I'm a French national, not from France, but from Union Island. Still a bit white European looking, where mixed culture marriage are very common since the early days of settlement. I married a woman with Chinese descendants. Our first boy was born in the USA, partially raised in Bahrain and now in Dubai. Recently, while talking to someone about his origins, he said, I am American, Chinese, French from Reunion. So what an amazing background that is. A question here for you, Sabine. No name on this one. Mm-hmm. And as I said, don't feel like you need to put your name on messages. I've lived in Dubai for over 10 years now with my husband and children. We're very happy here, but becoming very conscious of our parents getting older in our home country, who now find it harder to travel. Starting to feel very torn as to what to do. Would appreciate any insights.
Yes, this is another, challenge for expat life, you know, like what to do about our parents who are growing older. Mm-hmm. A lot of us feel that, you know, we don't have enough time or as much as we want to spend with them. And we feel compelled to travel back home and to spend more time with them as they're growing older. Well, it all depends on what your plan is for the future. I mean,
what makes financial sense for your family?
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, if your plan is to eventually go back home and retire there, you may want to. Sometimes we have to wait until kids are at university to be able to move back to our home countries. And this is another challenge. Initially, people come here for 5 years. This is what we said initially. We've been here for 15. And I really relate to that concern of, you know, what's going to happen our families.
Speaking from personal experience, my parents were in Muscat up until about 5 years ago, and they took the decision to move back to the UK because of the grannies, as we call them, you know, the mothers. And I know they're really grateful that they were there, not just to spend time with them, but to offer the kind of the practical support that they needed, because they were, you know, 83 and 93. They were elderly, but they felt like they'd had their time as expats, and they felt ready to move back. So they didn't feel resentful about it. So I think you have to know in your heart that it's the right time for them, and it's the right time for you as well.
It's a personal decision at the end of the day.
When we come back, we're looking at the benefits, and there are many. Stay with us. Now, when it comes to the benefits of being a third culture kid, there are lots.
A lot, a lot, a lot, a lot.
I think
as many as the challenges.
Yeah, I think it's true. And we do need to really be mindful of these great things that we are so lucky to be, enjoying. Absolutely. as residents here in the UAE. And we touched on earlier, John has messaged in saying that, you know, if they go back to the UK, they're going to be far more broad-minded.
Absolutely.
And how being exposed to different cultures and religions and food, and even the opportunity to, you know, to use Dubai as a base to travel, you know, beyond.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, we're really, really lucky. So I think expanded world view would be
absolutely
crucial.
I see it also. I mean, with my children, when we go back home and when they are with their cousins and so on, they talk about things that their cousins or other friends who stayed back home are not aware of. They speak, they definitely speak at least one more language, you know, more fluently, because Lebanese people by nature are more than bilingual. But the way that they experience Lebanon and the Lebanese culture is very different from when you are born and raised and have lived there all of your life. And this is what, I mean, this woman puts it beautifully. We consider the world our home. You know, raising children as citizens of the world in expat life gives them this sense of, care that other kids who are raised in their own community don't have, the openness. Because a lot of these, you know, TCKs, they want to do a lot of volunteer work, charity work. They are very inquisitive about what's going on around them, rather than, you know, being focused on one culture. And
or very sheltered.
Yes, exactly, absolutely.
Message here, no name on this one, saying, I identify as a British Pakistani born and bred in the UK, my husband too. When someone asked us in the UA where we are from, we say UK, but we found others question us and say, where are you really from? I've never questioned my identity since coming here. My husband and I regularly discuss what we are and what will our kids be, especially as we're close to Pakistan now too and go to the UK and Pakistan regularly. Message here from Antonio saying, home is where your family is. And I think that's a really lovely way of looking at it as well, where you build your home, where you choose to put your roots down. And even now, as I said, my parents lived all over the shop, but whenever I would go back and I was around them, it felt like home.
Yes, absolutely.
Major benefits, and a text here coming in from Natalie saying, my parents are Italian and Iraqi, was brought up here, and I truly feel my life is multicultural. I'd be confident moving anywhere in the world and I could fit in. Are you a third culture kid? Are you raising third culture kids here in the UAE? We'd love to hear from you and get your take on this trend, quite frankly, because as we've said earlier, 244 million of us are living as third culture kids or raising them. What about things like cultural sensitivities as well?
Of course, TCKs are more culturally sensitive because they grew up with the idea that people are quite diverse. So they grew up with this diversity, so they are more culturally sensitive. The challenge for TCKs is when they move countries, you know, because we are expats, we've been here for a long time, but some TCKs move countries every 3 to 4 years.
And we heard from the kids earlier,
yes,
you know, they lived in kind of 8, 9, 10 homes, and one girl
absolutely
said, you know, when asked where does she consider home, she said US, Asia and the airport.
Airports, yeah. I mean, this is where the challenges comes from, because then you cannot really plant roots anywhere. And it becomes very easy for you to up and go, and it becomes very easy for you to detach and take distance and move on without looking, you know, without grieving properly. And I think the unresolved grief, you know, when you say goodbye and you move on. So, I mean, this is something maybe we'll tackle later on, the
absolutely
unresolved griefs and grief in TCK kids.
Lucas has been on the text saying, my parents are Austrian. I grew up all over Europe, then Singapore, now living here. It was an amazing way to grow up and I would never wish for another way of life. But I do have regrets about losing touch with people over the years. And understandably so, I think, you know, many expat third culture kids have met people who've lived in places all their life and have known their friends since they were babies. And that's increasingly unusual, actually, in our kind of, you know, global nomadic way of living.
Yes, the feeling of rootlessness, like, who do I belong to? And again, I mean, the challenge is, you know, when you're younger than 12, it's fine. You want to be where your parents are. So even if you move during these years, it's less challenging for kids to adapt. But when you become a tween and a teen and you are trying to understand your multiple identities and then you're being moved constantly, this is where the challenges begin.
If you've got any advice for anybody who's about to relocate, having been through it yourself, we would love to hear from you. It's a really popular topic of conversation at the moment. Message here saying, my three kids were born in three different continents, Australia, America and the UAE. We've lived in different countries where they now confuse where they are from, especially on International Day at school. We're Australian nationals, sometimes they represent their birth countries. We would love to have you involved in our conversation this afternoon on Dubai Today. When we come back, we're tackling some of the challenges faced by third culture kids. Stay with us. Sabine, you are joining us this afternoon. We're talking on the topic of third culture kids.
Yes.
Lots of messages coming in on this. Hisham saying, I'm a second generation expat, born and brought up in Saudi to Indian parents, lived in the UK for a few years before moving to Dubai. At the end of the day, what happens to these third culture kids when they have to go back to their home country where their passport is from, but have never actually lived there? As much as I've loved being brought up in such a multicultural environment, I've noticed that there will be a stage in life where these kids will have an identity crisis.
Absolutely. I mean, this is one of the major challenges, is that at the end of the day, you know, you're going to have to go back home, whether you're in your teens or as an adult. And this is where the struggle comes, because your views of the world are quite different. You you don't belong in that culture anymore. You feel very judged, you feel different, you feel outcast, sidelined, and so on. This is why it's important as expats to keep educating our kids about our country of origin, even to the minimum, even just talking to them about it, making them watch a movie, trying food.
So funny you should say that. So yesterday, yeah, for nursery, my daughter had to take in a map of where she's from. Mm. So I printed off a map of the UK. Yes. I mean, she's been literally two times, probably for a total of about a month. I printed it off and I marked on the map, you know, where her grandparents lived, and I marked on London because we're going back in the summer. Mm. And I was like, okay, London, I wrote holiday. And she went, Paddington's from London. I was like, there we go, there's the pop culture references.
Not bad, not bad. But you see, they develop their own understanding and their own coping mechanisms, you know, to try and grasp all the ramifications of their identity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the other challenge that we can mention at this stage is the educational challenge, because when you're moving around to different countries, you are also moving your kids around into different educational systems.
Systems and stages and standards.
Yes, 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 yes. I mean, it all depends if you are a child or a student who can cope with change easily and integrate easily, it will not be a problem. But if you are doing, let's say, American curriculum, then you go into IB in a different country than the British curriculum, you will be lost in translation. And we receive a lot of these children for assessments because schools here believe that they have a specific learning disorder when they have not. But because they've shifted so many curriculums, of course, there will be strengths and weaknesses. So this is one of the things that really impacts third culture kids.
And what
is
do
the
you
movement
normally
between educational systems.
And how can they get support when it comes to the education side?
We look at the gaps, the educational gaps, and we focus on the gaps without really giving them a diagnosis. Someone who shifted 10 schools in 8 years cannot possibly be diagnosed with a specific learning disorder, but definitely high levels of anxiety, for example, because they don't know. It's sometimes they are moved in the middle of the academic year and they have to perform and they have to be to catch up a program that's been there for a few months now. It's very difficult.
Sabine joins us from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic to answer any of your questions and concerns about your own identity, perhaps as a third culture kid, or worries that you have about raising your own children as TCKs. Yes, not TKs. I've got to really think about it. Message here. We'd love to hear from you on this topic. It's obviously a really, really meaningful one to so many of us here in the region. No name on this one saying, I'm a third culture kid. Dad is Pakistani. Mum is English, born in the States and raised here. I'm pregnant, married to a Lebanese man, and I don't know where I'm from at all. And I guess our child will be from the UAE? No yes. idea.
Yes, that's how children identify themselves in the UAE.
Another message here saying, as an American TCK, born in Saudi, as was my wife, I didn't realise if we have kids and we want them to have US passports, that she'll need to travel back to give birth. There are some drawbacks. And that's something quite a few of my friends have dealt with that in terms of that, you know, being raised internationally, but identifying as English or Irish or Scottish. And in order to have a British passport, you know, get the birth certificate, they would have to travel back, and often, you know, 3 months in advance of the birth. Yeah. We'd love to hear from you on this topic. A message here saying, dear Helen, Paddington is actually from darkest Peru. So a migrant that integrated into the UK. Smiley face. You're quite right. I'll point out to my 3-year-old. Do get in touch on the text line, or you can join us on the phone as well. We've got Samir. Hi, Samir. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Are you a third culture kid? Are you raising one?
I am a third culture kid. I was born and brought up here. Now I'm like 36 years old. So I was like, I'm practically like living here for the past 36 years now.
And how do you feel being raised in, where are your parents from?
They are from India. They are from Mumbai.
Okay. And what do you identify as when it comes to nationality and culture?
See, the thing is that since I was born and raised over here, my heart and my soul is in Dubai only. Mm-hmm. You know, I consider this as my land, my country, motherland, you know, my blood, everything is here. My mother died over here and she's buried over here only. So The thing is that now that once if I lose my job or we have to go back, you know, it is something very impossible. It's like, you know, everything is going to just get over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It is very difficult. I just called because I wanted to give the example of my uncle. He was living here for past 22 years. And suddenly one day he had to leave because he lost his job. And ever since he never is, it's been like now more than 7-8 years he's in Bombay and he's not able to be recovered, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's
because
really
his career, his job, everything was over here. And now he's like totally ruined over there. He's in debts. He does not know what to do, you know. So it's a very bad situation for, okay, some people who they migrate, they are able to make good. But most of them, which I know on personal basis, I'm talking about Indians.
Mm-hmm.
When they migrate, they are not able to get back on their feet. So these are very serious things, you know, that people should address. Because once you are living here for such a long time and you need to go back, it's not just it is about identity crisis or culture. It is very serious thing, you know. People are not able to cope. Once you exit Dubai, that's the thing.
And that's exactly right in terms of the importance of adjusting when it comes to repatriation. Yes. Samir, thank you so much for sharing your insights and all the very best to you. Have your say on the topic of third culture kids. We are here until 2 o'clock. Sabine joins us to offer any advice or emotional support if you're struggling with identity, whether it's the practical side of living here in the region. 4001. You can message us on the Dubai Eye Messenger app. You can give us a call, 04-423-1010. A question here for you, Sabine, saying, how can I instill a sense of belonging in my children, ages 3 and 5? We're from Ireland, but they were born here and I've only been to Ireland once. I don't know what to tell them when they ask where they are from.
Yes, I mean, this is a challenge for the expat parents. I think it's important to, you know, speak positively about the culture of origin. Even, I mean, it doesn't have to be constant.
Mm-hmm.
But just, you know, highlight a few things, things that are culturally known, languages, food, monuments, stories.
It's very, very different to what it was a few years ago. When my parents moved to Abu Dhabi in like 1977, Mum was having to write letters back home. Oh. And, you know, it was intense, you know, in terms of the separation and the real,
record
the little, you know, the airmail. You know, it was very, very different and communication was a lot harder. Mm. Whereas now we have got an opportunity to educate through YouTube. Mm. But do you know what I mean in terms of actually showing people what is out there?
Absolutely.
And so many more different cultural reference points, which actually, just to come back to the text that came in earlier, the gentleman who said he was raised in Hong Kong long before the internet, saying it was tough going back to university in the UK and not knowing TV shows that everybody was talking about.
I would imagine
that's a really real struggle for kids and teens, and find themselves in an environment where a lot of chat in the playground or, you know, play dates, sleepovers will be around celebrities, you know, radio, music, TV shows that are literally foreign to people.
Yeah, this is the difficulty of going back home to settle. You know, as this gentleman spoke about, when there is unresolved grief and there's no transition period, no kind of closure, it may lead to extreme symptomatology, you know, from a psychological perspective and extreme behavior. However, if you plan things out ahead of time, you all know that we're not going to stay here for the rest of our lives.
Mm.
No matter, I mean, it could be 10, 20, 30, no matter what, we all know that at some point we are going back home. So knowing, having that knowledge is quite empowering because you know how to plan your repatriation and your integration back to your home.
I think you can plan the practical side, but the emotional side is very, very different. Actually, some friends that moved back last year, they went to counselling before moving back to the UK as a couple.
Yes.
So they were on the same page. There would be no resentment on either side about why they were moving back. Yeah. So, you know, you're taking me back and, you know, address that.
Mm.
And what her counsellor said, which I thought was really insightful, was basically you need to grieve for the person that you were here in Dubai because that chapter is over.
Yes, and this takes time. And I mean, we will probably listen to Ruth talking about it. Yes,
absolutely.
That grief takes time. And sometimes when you're up and running, you don't have that time. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to be prepared emotionally and practically.
Easier said than done. If you have moved around, adjusted a lot, perhaps you have some unresolved grief yourself, do get in touch. 4001 on the text line. You can message us for free on the app or give us a call, 04 423 1010. Artie's messaging saying, we have settled in Dubai and love it, been here for 20 years and raised 3 kids here. They think of India as home. They've only ever been on holiday there. Get in touch. Have your say. When we come back, we're going to be hearing from the founder of the very notion of third culture kids. I'm Helen Farmer. Stay with us. Sabine joins us from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, a clinical psychologist. She's here to offer some emotional support to anyone who needs it, as well as share her expert insights on the topic of third culture kids. Lots of messages, as I would expect and hope for on this topic, because it's something so close to so many of us living here in a multicultural city. Either raising third culture kids, many of us are third culture kids. Yes. And you don't need to put your name on the message if you prefer not to. Message here saying, constantly remind your kid that they are who they are. My son, born in the USA, raised in Asia and Middle East. As an expat, he is flexible. He's at college in Texas, is now transferring to a Japanese college. He just thinks his life is more interesting than most. He is flexible and happy because he chooses to be happy.
But also because probably the parents lived their expat life positively, and you know, have done what is good for the family in terms of preparation, transition, and so on. So this is why it has not probably been very challenging. But this is when you choose to move. But sometimes people are third culture kids when it's not their choice in the context of immigration, for example.
Ruth saying, I think about this subject almost every week. I'm British, my husband Emirati Egyptian. I cannot go back to the UK. It would be too difficult for my husband, so we're always looking for what's next. If we can't find somewhere we both agree on, there's always Fallberg, the only place all immigrants settle when they are not accepted anywhere else. There are many third culture kids right here at Dubai Eye, and this is one of our very own, Sonal Rupani, talking about her own upbringing.
My parents are from India. They actually spent about 14 years in Hong Kong. They moved straight after they got married and had to adjust to life there. My mom actually didn't speak English when she moved there. She taught herself, I think, watching TV and soap operas, which I think is really impressive. So they had to adapt to life there. I was actually born in Hong Kong, but moved to Dubai when I was 7 years old in around 1992. So those were the days when, you know, when you see those photos and it's only the World Trade Center and sand around it. That's exactly what it looked like when I came here. After that, I did all of my schooling here. I went to an American school here and then went to the U.S. for college for 4 years. Lived in New York briefly after that and then moved back to Dubai. And it's been about 10 years since that happened. I think one of the biggest benefits of being a third culture kid, this is actually both a benefit and a con, I think, is I don't feel strong senses of nationalism. National boundaries feel completely arbitrary to me. I mean, obviously, I understand how they exist and how they came to be, and obviously the power of having a strong national identity. But just as someone who doesn't have one myself, I tend to see people as humans. And I think in a way that's a nice thing. Of course, you do feel like you miss out a little bit in the sense of not belonging somewhere specifically. In terms of other pros and cons, I think the world feels open. I think if you're a third culture kid, probably for the most part, you're adaptable. You enjoy learning about different cultures. You enjoy travel, of course, enjoy exploration of new places. And in terms of the cons, again, sometimes feeling like you don't have a home, a specific home or a place that you belong to, but in a way that also has your back. Like, you're not a citizen of anywhere, I feel like.
That was our own Sonal Rupani talking about her experiences as a third culture kid. Tarek saying, I'm from Pakistan and have lived in Dubai for 39 years. Just the thought of moving back gives me nightmares. Long live UAE. And a message here, no name on this one, saying, my kids are third culture kids and I was a foreign service kid and moved every 3 years. And I think it's a great asset to be mixed. It forces you to question who you really are, not bound by a place or religion or a race. It allows you to get along with anyone. It allows you to have an open mind and adjust to situations. I think it's the parents who are most upset by the fact that children need to belong. What's your take on that, Sabine?
Yes, I mean, it sounds very familiar. Yeah, and I do tend to agree, because it's again how the parents live the expatriation that matters. I'm going to give a personal example. For example, I'm from Lebanon and all my friends are Lebanese. And when it was time for our kids to start schooling, most of my friends wanted me to enroll my daughter in the Lebanese community school here. And I wanted her to have the expat experience because they are growing. I mean, this is the future. So again, it's the parents that wanted the children to be in that close community for it to enhance their Lebanese identity. I don't think you get less of your home country identity if you are exposed to other cultures, you know? Mm. On the contrary, I think you can identify what is your identity is and embrace that, but also be open-minded about other people's cultures.
I liked what Sunil said there about seeing just people as being humanity.
Humans. Yes, absolutely.
And thinking about the world as being a much easier place to access and travel around.
Yes, and this is what actually living here forces you to do. Because if you are going to criticize and close up because of different cultures and religions, you end up staying alone. You might as well have never left your home country. Mm-hmm. You know, we are here and we are privileged and we really need to experience the positive of the positives of expat life.
As you said, some people come here as third culture kids or come here as adult expats and raise kids here. And for various reasons, families can be separated.
Yes.
Father might stay in the region and mothers go back with the kids. So there can be real issues when it comes to relationships and marriages, when it comes to living internationally as well.
Absolutely.
Any advice for someone who is going through that at the moment?
I always tell people, give yourself 6 months to a year since you arrive to integrate. The first 6 months, especially if you're moving and the kids are a bit older and they have their own preferences, you know, give yourself 6 months to a year, and if you still don't like it or don't feel that you belong or you have integrated, then you can make a decision. Moving countries is very difficult for families who are established in other countries. Even moving houses is quite, you know, stressful.
Well, you've just moved recently.
Exactly.
The kids didn't cope very well with it.
No. Not initially, but now it's getting... They were saying that...
This is just within Dubai, by the way.
Yes, this is within Dubai. Dubai, a few kilometers away from like within the same city. They were worried that other people are going to live in their house,
which they are.
but then I had to explain that this is a rental, this is not an owned house. But where is our owned house? Where is our house? And they keep asking me now, have other people moved in yet? They're worried about that. And I say, no, not yet. It's like, okay, why did we move then? So going back to I forgot what we were discussing.
but kids adjusting, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's the parents' role to make a job. It's our job to make an easy transition and to give ourselves time to adjust before we say, okay, we're going to be separated. You stay here. We're going back home because this is too difficult. There's always support in Dubai.
And I think a lot of that comes from identifying in yourself that you need a bit of help and need a bit of support and knowing where to go to get it. Because, you know, you can move to a new city, move to a new country, and that could be moving to Dubai or it could be moving to your home country.
But
you need to reach out. And as we discussed earlier on the topic of loneliness, extending yourself.
Absolutely. We had a support group run last year. We called it Expat Wife, Expat Life. And we received, I mean, the group was made of different women of different nationalities who had recently moved in, and they had similar challenges. And they found it to be very helpful to come and talk about, you know, their difficulties with other women from other cultures as well. So there's always, you know,
always someone there.
Yes, absolutely.
Sabine joins us in the Human Relations Institute and Clinic here until 2 o'clock this afternoon, talking on the topic of third culture kids. Now, we are trying something new and really exciting here at Dubai Eye 103.8. We would love you to be involved. From July, we'll be playing your favourite songs of the summer, and we would love you to help shape the playlist. It's also your chance to win a fabulous family holiday for four to Sicily. So just go to our homepage on DubaiEye1038.com. That's DubaiEye1038.com, and take part in a really quick music survey for your chance to win and to hear the music you want to listen to. Stay with us.
On the couch on Dubai Today.
Need some advice? Call 04-423-1010.
Now, the term third culture kid was coined by the anthropologists John and Ruth Hill Usim in the 1950s, originally used to describe the children of American expatriates in India. It's a pretty broad term covering everything from military brats to, quote unquote, and the children of missionaries, diplomats and business people. But perhaps the best known third culture kid is Barack Obama, son of a Kenyan father and American mother who spent his childhood between Indonesia and Hawaii. We're talking third culture kids this afternoon. And Ruth Van Reken is a second generation third culture kid, the mother of three adult TCKs and the co-author of the internationally acclaimed book Third Culture Kids, Growing Up Among Worlds. Here she is sharing her insights on the griefs and gains of being a third culture kid.
When I was born in Nigeria, we were all U.S. citizens. All eight people in my family, even though seven of us were never born there, were U.S. citizens. So we knew that about ourselves. But that wasn't the place of my heart as I grew up. When I grew up in Nigeria, I loved it. It was almost an idyllic childhood when I think about it. I had friends from all over the world. I loved to eat tour de meal with my Nigerian friends, go to high tea with my British friends, go to market, climb my trees, and above all, maybe going to bed at night and listening to the African drums in the village and the sound of the rain on my tin roof. It was my sense of home. It's a sense of belonging. But I always knew I wasn't going to stay because my passport said I'd had a different home. My mother talked about going home, and guess where she talked? Chicago. To this day, she says, I never knew Chicago wasn't your home until you start doing all this crazy stuff. I said, but Mom, think about it. Where did I grow up? So the day finally came when it was time to leave, to go home. I was excited about that in many ways because my grandma's at home. I heard all my stories about going home. But what I didn't know was the day that I took that airplane ride and the door closed, I lost my world. We never had a funeral though, because it wasn't my world. Now we get off, we're in the States. But guess what? That wasn't my world either. When people in Nigeria asked me where I was from, I always said the United States. When people in Nigeria, the United States asked me where I was from, I would say Nigeria. And they'd say, but you can't be, you don't look like it. So I didn't know pretty soon where I was from. It was a terrible year. 13 is a terrible year anyway. But it was a really terrible year because I didn't know what all the other 13-year-olds knew. I didn't know how to ice skate. They had football there. They called it football. They threw the thing. I said, that cannot be football because in football, you have to kick it. I know about football. I grew up with football. And so it was like total disorientation. But I was supposed to be like that. So after my first year, I graduated from eighth grade. I decided when I went to high school, I would keep a very big secret. The secret that I had ever been in Africa. Why? Because it made me too weird. It made me strange. So I had a successful time in high school. I went on with my life. I got married. I had three children. Life was going well. But there was always this place that there was like a silent depression that I could never understand. I found when I had people close to me, like when I got married, I would tend to push my husband away just when we got close, because I'd lost everybody in my life through mobility, and so I stayed ready for that to happen again. Well, in time, we wound up in Liberia ourselves. And when I was there, I finally, at age 39, decided I needed to understand my story, and I started to journal. And as I did that, I wound up getting an article in the mail from my mother, and in it, it said there was such a thing as third culture kids. It was the first time I knew I had a name. Third culture kids are those who have spent a significant time of their developmental years outside their parents' passport culture. And the reason it's significant that it's the developmental years, what do we develop in their first 18 years of life? This is basically where you identify who you are as a person. You learn your languages, you learn the cultural rules. Traditionally, when kids learned them, then they went on to test them as adolescents, internalize them, and when you're an adult, you know where you belong, where you fit, how life works in this place, right? Well, I found out, when I found out I had a name, that I was not alone in the feelings that I had had, that there were people all over the world who also thought, what's the matter with me? And didn't understand the way our story was. I know the story of the third culture kid well. The conversation I'm trying to engender in the world to rethink is, how do we rethink what it is for children of all these backgrounds when they grow up globally, or they just grow up, you can grow up in one place. So my definition for cross-cultural kids is a child who's interacted in the developmental age with people with different cultures in meaningful ways, and that conversation is still going on. But as I discuss the third culture kid, you can tell me, or you can receive, the pieces that are relevant for you or your story. So what are the biggest challenges that kids face when they grow up globally like I did? Certainly identity is a huge issue. When I've been interacting with all kinds of worlds, which one am I, right? So the question of who am I is big. One question TCKs hate is, where are you from? I still just say I live in Indianapolis. I don't know where I'm from to this day in many ways. But another huge issue is, where do I belong? If you look at the TCK websites, that question of belonging is a huge one. Where do I belong? What do I do? And so that's one set of issues. The other is unresolved grief. People ask, well, why do you talk about grief so much? I said, well, you know, you don't grieve for something you didn't love. And so while we haven't had a process to work with it, we wind up, it stays with us as it did with me. So I want to explain in more detail why the identity happens and why the grief happens. The identity issues primarily come from the cross-cultural aspect of this lifestyle. When we learn who we are, not only do we learn the rules from our parents, but we also have a community that reflects back to us who they see us to be, right? And that's part of learning who you are. When you are growing up globally, you keep switching the box. You keep switching the definition. When I started in Nigeria, which box was I in? I was in the foreigner box, wasn't I? I looked different, I thought different, I could have great friends who are Nigerian, but nobody expected me to be exactly alike. So we interacted from this place of foreignness, but it could be a place of friendship too. But I took the airplane ride back to Chicago. Where did I wind up? Hidden immigrant. It was before integration. Everybody in school looked like me, and they expected me to know what they knew. They expected me to be alike. And pretty soon, all I know is they think I'm weird. What happened to this person? And this woman, a child who thought she fit in all sorts of places, winds up thinking, what's the matter with me? You can be in the adopted box. People, particularly immigrant children, can be in a new culture and assimilate, and other people are expecting them to be who they used to be. Then in the mirror, we have what would be the traditional place, where you look alike and you think alike. But what I want to make the point is, you can switch that box over and over. Every time you take a plane ride, you'd be in a different box. But you can be in it whether you're in your home country or the host country. So that's the first thing, our box keeps switching. And then the way the kids respond becomes interesting. There's three very common responses when people are confused. One is that they're chameleon. And That was my choice. I put away Africa. All I tried to do was be who I should be for the new place. Before you tell me I'm different, I'll tell you I'm different. And so at that point, they don't know who they are. All they know is who they're not. I didn't know who I was because I tried to be what everybody else wanted me to be. But a screamer thinks they're being independent, but often they're just being something that they're not. They're being an anti-identity. Then the wallflower is someone who just doesn't try. They've gone so long, they can't try.
That was Ruth Van Racken, second generation third culture kid and the author of Third Culture Kids, Growing Up Among Worlds. What's your take there on how she feels people adapt, Sabine?
It's such a powerful TED Talk. I mean, when she talks, we feel she's still affected by her third culture kid status. Yeah, she compares the chameleon to the wallflower, you know, where you, chameleon is where you become what others expect you to be, and wallflower is not even trying. It's like, you know, giving up on trying to show what your true identity is. I mean, in both approaches, it's like you're giving up, you know. It's like, no matter what you are going to display, people will not understand, so why bother trying? So there's this sense of despair in a way.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about how to help your child adapt when you move next. Sabine joins us from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic on our hot topic of the day, third culture kids. So just to recap, how do you define a third culture kid, Sabine?
Again, it's any child who is born and raised in a culture that is not his parents, his or her parents, you know?
So many of us, really, and certainly
Most of us now,
here in the region who are raising kids here in Dubai, that will absolutely be the case. And we've talked about psychological effects it can have, the benefits and the challenges. And I wanted to give you a little rundown from BuzzFeed, signs that you are a third culture kid. You are a third culture kid, Sabine?
I am.
Okay, so let's see how many that you are identifying with. To everyone's confusion, your accent changes depending on who you're talking to.
Not really. Yeah. I only have one accent.
You're good at calculating time differences. You have to do it every time you call your family.
Yes.
Yeah. You start getting birthday wishes several hours before your birthday because from your friends and family further east than you.
Bien sûr. Yes.
You have a love-hate relationship with the question, where are you from?
No.
Complicated one, isn't it?
I consider myself to be Lebanese. I have grieved and mourned that at my age, I mean.
I know this is a personal question, so I'm not going to ask you to answer this one. Your list of significant others' nationality reads like a soccer World Cup bracket. Don't answer that one. I don't want to know.
Okay.
You get nervous whenever a form needs you to enter a permanent address. Even after 11 years in Dubai, I'm like, well, I don't know what my permanent address is.
No,
is it my parents' address at home? Is it where I live now? Is it my husband's office? Like, what do I do? Is it where I get my ASOS order sent to? Like, you know,
one of my friends helped me to adjust to my move. She said, start typing your new address so you know it's official that you have moved. Right now, change your home address in all of, the apps that deliver to your house. And I found it to be helpful, actually.
To make peace with it. You're a food snob because you sampled the best and most authentic of every possible cuisine.
Yes.
What's your favorite cuisine?
Italian.
Italian. Interesting. So we would love to hear from you, with you until 2 o'clock this afternoon on the topic of third culture kids. Sabine joins us to offer some insights and some advice, of course. Now, as we know, many of us will not be here forever. We'll be relocating, whether that means to another country or back to our home or so-called home country. What advice would you give to somebody who is relocating in terms of settling themselves and their children in as quickly, smoothly and painlessly as possible?
I think they have to start with the preparation months ahead of time to familiarize themselves with the home address, the schools that are available, because this is the first thing we do when we move families. We look for good schools, right? The surrounding, the setting, doctors, pediatrician, you know, anything, just to make the points of reference as similar as possible as to where you were living.
You could even get on Google Maps and Google Earth and literally have a look at the streets and navigate the towns.
We have so many facilities now. So if you are prepared, then you're not in panic mode when your kids ask you to take them somewhere, or you know where the pharmacy is, you know where to get the school books. And so you have to familiarize yourself with where you're moving to, and then give as much, because it's a moment in time where kids feel they have loss of control, you know, they don't have control over the situation. So give them as much control as possible. Like, what if they want to keep the same room, they want to keep the same toys, if they want to keep, you know, and allow them to decorate, even though it's not your taste, you know, allow them to have some say in some areas of that home, so they can feel that their opinion is important, you know, that this is not happening to them, it's not imposed on them. They are also actors, they're not victims of that move, I think. And have portable roots, you know, Ruth uses this word where you have portable roots, so you can take with you something that reminds you of where you've been living for some time, and then you can move that thing with you. It could be a decoration, it could be a painting, it could be different things, you know.
So funny you say that. When my parents moved back to the Middle East about 12 years ago, my mum hadn't shared with my dad all the things she'd packed, and when we moved into the service department in Bahrain, she unpacked a suitcase and it had rugs and pictures and all sorts of things from home that it was so odd to see them in this completely different setting, but it really did help.
Of course, because this is what I did with the move. I mean, moving houses is nothing compared to moving countries, but it does help the kids because they felt right in.
Yeah, those touch
you know,
points.
When you keep things the same. And also, I mean, in the TED Talk, Ruth says that parents are so quick to encourage but not to comfort. And I think it's important to tell the kids that this is going to be a hard time for you as well, that you are also feeling, you know, upset, sad, you know, just allow them to grieve. If you can grieve comfortably, they will do it too. And all of the transition will be smooth. So also comfort, tell them, prepare them that this is going to be hard, but we're all going to help each other. I think this is important.
And as we said earlier, the world is our home, and home is where the family is.
Yes.
Sabine, thank you so much for joining
You're us welcome.
From the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Always an absolute pleasure to have you on sharing your insights.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.